Okay, so we've thanked our friends. We've talked to Stevie Jeebee and Rabbi Saul Solomon. We've had our limerick. We've gone Inside Broadway. We've done Greeley Crimes and Old Times. But if you remember, when my darling and adorable wife was here much earlier in the show, one of the things that I asked her to do was to go into the Merriam-Webster Dictionary of 75,000 definitions and completely at random pick one. And that's exactly what she did. And that's exactly what we do on Dave's Big Dictionary.
Extry, extry, tell all about it. It's Dave's Big Dictionary.
So the word that she managed to pick, kind of an interesting one, is proscribe. Not prescribe like with medicine from the drugstore or from a doctor, but proscribe, P-R-O-S-C-R-I-B-E, or she picked proscribing, that form of it. That's what her finger actually landed on. And she read and she explained that it is to condemn or forbid because it's going to be something harmful, okay? You're prescribed from doing that. There's a prescription from drinking and driving, because if you do it, you're probably going to hurt yourself or hurt somebody else. Okay, so my job on Dave's Big Dictionary is to figure out a way to talk about and describe proscribe that relates to me. I have an anecdote, perhaps, something involved in that. And, you know, I'm the artsy, creative-y type to an extent. So anytime somebody tells me not to do something, my first instinct is, oh, I'm going to do that. Now, I don't do that with illegal substances or chemicals, or that's not my scene, that's not my speed. And I'm kind of the nanny to my friends and colleagues and strangers and stuff. I remember, honestly, this actually happened. It was back when we were in California, I think, at a USC fellowship for journalists. And we would be going from a restaurant to go to either the theater, or we'd have a seminar or a panel. And I'd sort of go up ahead when the light had changed, and we're walking across the street, and traffic is there. And I would literally sort of go up a little ahead of everybody else and kind of wave them on. Like they're all six-year-olds trying to cross the street. And I'm like, with my hand out to the cars, like, yeah, we're walking here. We're walking. Like, protecting my charges as if they couldn't do this for themselves. So I'm sort of the nanny person more than anything else. But when it comes to humor and freedom of freedom of speech, prescription hits me completely the other way. If you tell me, don't do this, or this is wrong, my first instinct is, oh, I've got to do this. I've got to push that envelope. I've got to tear that open. I've got to break that, because that is just me. It's just what I do and what I have to do. Now, I might, if my better nature gets the best of me, think after what's gone through in my head, the horrible things, and say, no, I better not. Better not. And there was that 3 or 5 part South Park series where I think Stan's father gets completely sucked into the internet and Facebook, and he's just, all he is half the day is writing the most disgusting, despicable things to people that he politically disagrees with. And then they're writing back, and he figured, because it's anonymous, it's free, it's the interwebs, he can do that. That's part of the joy of it, that you can post, somebody says something that you find really offensive or stupid, and the immediate temptation is to tweet back as someone very high in government levels tends to do, or on Facebook, and just not just say, here's why I believe you are wrong, and factually I've checked this, and I've sourced this, and you can see my works cited page. No, it's sort of like, screw you, I hope you die of this horrible disease, and it just spins down from there. And it gives all these people who have very little power in their lives, and probably not a lot of money, but suddenly, for the moment, they have a voice in a way that they never had a voice before. That has been the miracle and joy of Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and, back in the day, MySpace. This is people's way of, I'll never be president, I'll never run a company, I'll never be on stage at a grand opera or on a Broadway stage. But by gosh, if I tweet something, and it's a popular topic, dozens, maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of people will retweet me. Maybe I'll have a meme, even, and I'll be part of something bigger. Or maybe I'll just tell this idiot what I think of him, and rather than just reading like an editorial in a newspaper and being steamed because I can write a letter to the editor or not, or nobody will ever know, now I'm like, as many people might read me as read this idiot in the first place. And there I go. So, how much could and should people get away with when they're doing this? Should they be proscribed artistically, creatively, social media-ly from saying what they mean to say, even if that speech is not nice, even if it's borderline offensive, even if that speech could perhaps be taken as racist, sexist, and so forth, homophobic, anti-Semitic. I mean, that's been not just my joke, but everybody's joke, that if you go on a YouTube video, pretty much any YouTube video that has a lot of hits, you get a couple down and they say, oh, this is great, and somebody says, no, this is not so great. Six or seven postings down, people start arguing about politics, and somebody says something anti-Semitic. And that is the nature of the beast of the interwebs. So something really bothered me this week that happened. And I wonder if it bothers you too or not. If somebody was proscribed, somebody put something on the internet this week that people objected to. They didn't like it. Now, this was not a racist rant or anti-Semitic or anti-gay, lesbian, homophobic thing. Nothing even to do with that, because Facebook deleted a bunch of accounts and a bunch of postings of things coming from Iran and Afghanistan. And I have some freedom of speech problems with that as well. I do. But for me, this goes a little beyond. There's a guy in England who witnessed a horrible car accident, right? And he happened to be there, and he happened to have his phone. And unlike some people who would go help, or other people who sort of look or turn away or go away and let the EMT do their things, this guy took out his phone and started taking pictures of the accident. And he started taking pictures of the victim, the dead person in the accident then, because there were two people in the car. One person was driving. I'm not sure if he or she lived, but the woman in the passenger seat was killed. And apparently she was badly mangled, bloody. I don't know if she was decapitated. She was surely defenestrated. And just, you know, horrible condition of this corpse, freshly dead in this car accident. This happened a week ago. And this fella, bystander, sees this and is kind of fascinated. And instead of walking away, he looks. And instead of just whatever, instead of just looking, he pulls out his phone or camera and starts taking a bunch of pictures, right? And not just of the twisted wreckage of the car, but of the actual body mangled and destroyed. And he takes these pictures and he posts them, either on Facebook or on another social media. So I think it might have been Instagram, or else I'm thinking of Instagram because of the farty guy that we were talking about earlier. And he posts them on social media, and about 70 people see them. Most of them have a problem with it. Most of them say, oh, no, don't, please take those down. One or two complained. Facebook responded, stopped, you know, took the pictures down, and the guy was arrested. The guy was arrested for posting what are essentially news or newsworthy photographs, even though if it had been a famous woman, if it was Princess Diana, those would be sold for $1 million to the National Enquirer and locked in a safe that magically disappears. But that bugs me, because here's a guy who is fascinated by this death moment, shares it with like people, and people do have that instinct in them, some of us. That instinct of, oh, it's so horrible, I can't look, but I want to look. It's like, yeah, it's disgusting, this is going to be imprinted in my brain for the rest of my life, I never want to remember this, and yet I have to see. And so I guess without warning or without making his thing private, he just sort of posted it. So whoever happened upon his profile got to see these pictures of this destroyed, fresh, blood-soaked, bone-poking corpse. To be arrested, and again, this was in England, not in America, and there's some kind of law that he broke, apparently, there, or is charged with, like malicious material being disseminated. Some kind of real British-y way of saying that he's posting stuff like a German posting excerpts from Mein Kampf on Facebook would not be allowed. It would be someone doing real go lynch somebody kind of hate speech. But this is, I don't think that falls into this category. These are not images that I really want to see. But there's precedent for this. Back in the early years of home video, I don't know if you remember this, but back when there were VHS tapes that you would go to the corner store and you'd rent, and before Blockbuster even, before Netflix, in the 70s, well, early 80s for sure, okay? And you would have the store, and they'd have the big Hollywood movies, and if you were lucky, they'd carry some independent stuff, and then there'd be a little room off the side with the porn, right? And then in that area, too, and then there'd be the horror, the graphic section, where they wouldn't let the kids go either. So you could get horror movies that were getting pretty rough. Because, you know, until the 1960s, horror movies were scary, and psychologically, and Hitchcock and all that, and Nosferatu. But it took the late 60s for horror movies to go that next level of being really disturbing and sometimes sadistic and stuff. Well, does anybody remember this? That there a video came out that became a sensation and a big seller, and it was called Faces of Death. And what it was, and I never saw it, I never wanted to see it, but it was like 75 minutes of actual real-life accidents and their aftermath, and pictures of people in various states of dying and death in horrible, sick ways. Real ones. They weren't, it wasn't snuff films in that they were made for the purpose of the movie, but it also wasn't faked the way they do. What was that show that I can't even watch on cable? Was it A Thousand Ways to Die? And they recreate these insane, horrible, Final Destination kind of deaths to say, well, you know, this is, the chances of this happening are 1,000,000 to 1. But it happened to this guy where he was stung by bees when he opened his blender. And, what? Right? Shit happens. But these were real. Okay, these were real, actual, you know, Al Capone shot to death videos, and people jumping off bridges and being hauled out of OSHA. I never saw Faces of Death, but I know that's kind of what it was. And it sold millions or tens of thousands of copies. Enough that they did a Faces of Death 2 and a Faces of Death 3. And I remember it being very controversial, of course, and people going, this is the end of the world. If this is somebody's idea of entertainment, that is a really sick person. They should get therapy. These tapes should be torn off the market. This should not be in any way some kind of commercial, viable movie. Even if it falls into the documentary realm, it's just exploitation. And it's really, really a sick idea that people are going to want to watch this. And yet, the children, as it were, the G-rated children of Faces of Death is stuff like Ridiculousness. It's stuff like Jackass. It's, somebody, at first it was America's Funniest Home Videos. Oh, a baby falls down. Oh, some guy gets hit in the head with a ball. And they're not hurt. And then you get the next level, the Jackassery and the Ridiculousness, where people are hurt. It's still funny. But someone comes down a slide or does a skateboard in the wrong way, gets crumpled up, and goes, oh man, think I broke my arm. And everybody laughs and laughs and laughs. And if he comes down in a funny way, you can't help but laugh. But you've just watched the person break their arm. Right? Now, they don't show a death thing for humor. But and there are other shows on TV now, shows on cable, where they'll show them. You've seen this. 20 worst traffic accidents captured on film. And in those accidents, people die. Now, they don't show the corpses being hauled off, but they literally show the accident itself, because it's exciting. There's fire and noise and twisted metal and this. You don't really hear it screaming. And so we've come that far in 35, 40 years from Faces of Death to regular cable television on, you know, probably with a PG-13 or a MS-14 warning before the show starts, which is really going to stop a kid from you know, thumbing through it. And he gets there in the middle of the show. So we do that. That's part of our culture. It's part of our nature to gawp at the traffic accident. Slow down. See, ooh, is anybody dead in that car? You know, is there a human hand on the sidewalk? We do it. We have that morbid curiosity is what it is. And I'll ascribe that to that English guy who was arrested, saw an accident, took pictures, and then posted those pictures publicly. I don't understand why that isn't or doesn't fall under the category of news. I mean, you don't get the corpse to sign a release form for a fictional film, but at the same time, if you were to send that to Eyewitness News or the news channel, and they decided to run parts of it or blur parts of it out, that's not illegal. That's not hate speech or inappropriate or offensive speech. It's just, oh, this happened, and it's horrible. Be careful when you're driving on those roads, ladies and gentlemen. So I hope this guy, I'm away from the whole story. Maybe there'll be a court case, maybe he'll plead out. But I hope this English guy gets off several times in prison. With a friend. No, but for what he did, for posting actual public pictures, I assume it's on public property, of some horrible accident, and then, okay, if Facebook says that's really not appropriate content for us, we're taking that down. These pictures are proscribed from public view, fine. But to arrest him for this? You know, Trump made a speech this week about just what Facebook is doing in terms of blocking the free speech of the right wing, supposedly, and conservatives. And much as I disagree with them almost all the time, they deserve their voice. Even the alt-right, perhaps, to an extent. Even the white supremacists, to some small ACLU extent. It's a free country, right? And they're free to post, and a million other people are free to post under their post and say, you're morons. We hope you die. Hitler is so great. How come Nazi Germany was destroyed by allies of all different ethnicities? I mean, just post. They get to post. We get to post. That's a freer society. So if I walk out here and I see something horrible in the street, I'm probably not going to post it on Facebook, but I would like the notion that I could. Or if not on Facebook, maybe my own website, right? Or on another platform, perhaps. And people don't like it, don't go to my site. You don't want to see something like that, I'll put a disclaimer beforehand. Like, don't look if you don't want to see this kind of thing. But as far as being able to post it at all, and share it, it's not child pornography, it's not torture, it's just the after effects of a public event. And I feel bad for that guy, and I feel, again, bad against the proscription of freedom of image, freedom of speech, freedom of the press. And that is my thought on the word proscribe from Dave's Big Dictionary.